Call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 27th of April. We have three bills scheduled for public hearings and possible work sessions today: House Bill 2534, House Bill 2446, and House Bill 2453. We're awaiting the arrival of Representative Witt for House Bill 2534, so we are going to go first to House Bill 2446, which is the raw milk bill. So we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2446. Beth, you want to tell us what we're doing, and if the department would like to come forward and kick off the testimony on the bill, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2446, there's a no revenue and no fiscal impact on the bill, and it deletes the prohibition against advertising by an unregulated producer engaged in small-scale on-premises sale of raw milk directly to the consumer.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you about House Bill 2446. This is a bill brought forward by the agency. It's the result of a lawsuit in which a producer of raw milk challenged a very narrow exemption that's in Oregon law. So for background, by and large, the sale of raw milk is illegal in the state of Oregon, with the exception of a very small exemption that allows, if a person does not advertise, the milk is sold directly from the premises to the end consumer, and there are no more than three dairy cows, two lactating, or I think it's nine sheep. Nine goats or sheep. So in the fall of 2013, we entered into a settlement agreement with Cast Iron Farms because they challenged the First Amendment free speech part of this in terms of the advertising. We were advised that it was likely a violation of free speech to have an outright prohibition on advertising for these small producers. And so in front of you is a very narrow piece of legislation that only deletes the advertising prohibition. It continues to maintain that very small exemption for three dairy cows, two lactating, and it still requires raw milk to be sold from the premises where it's produced. And I'll stop there and answer any questions.
Okay. Lauren, do you have anything? Okay. Questions from the committee?
No geese or ducks.
I don't see any questions thus far, so. Okay, thank you both. Who's that? Who do we have? Oh, okay. Okay, next we'll have Christine Anderson, and we have Michael Bendis on the phone. And so, Christine, you want to start?
You want to go ahead and let Michael go first.
How about you, Michael?
Yes, thank you, Chair Edwards and members of the committee. Sorry, I'm catching my breath here. I was just running to find a quiet space. My name is Michael Bendis, and I am an attorney with the Institute for Justice, which is a public interest nonprofit law firm based in Arlington, Virginia. And we're here today to testify in support of the department's bill, House Bill 2446. And, excuse me, I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify telephonically. I know that's less than ideal circumstances, but I appreciate the opportunity. The Institute for Justice litigates in several constitutional areas, one of which is defending the right of free speech. And that includes the right of commercial speech, that is the right of small businesses, entrepreneurs, and farmers to speak about the products and services that they lawfully offer. Excuse me. And to that end, one of the cases that we have litigated in that area is Anderson versus Cova, which is the case that the department representative just referenced that gave rise to the bill that's before you this afternoon. In the summer of 2012, our client, Christine Anderson, was visited by an inspector from the state, and advised that she had been engaged in the illegal advertising of raw milk. And that illegal advertising was the posting the price of the milk that she was legally selling on the website of her farm, Cast Iron Farm. And Christine was advised, or instructed, I should say, to remove the information from her website immediately, which, of course, she complied with. And had she not, the state relevant state laws provide for penalties up to $6,250, as well as up to a year in jail. This, again, for the crime of simply speaking about a product that is perfectly lawful to sell. We heard about Christine's plight and agreed to represent her free of charge to challenge this advertising ban. And our argument was very simple. The First Amendment of the United States Constitution prohibits government from banning speech about a lawful product. And that argument is very well supported in the case law that the U.S. Supreme Court has issued in this area. The Supreme Court has made a number of things very clear. One, the First Amendment protects commercial speech. Two, advertising restrictions on lawful products are subject to very rigorous constitutional scrutiny. And in fact, the Supreme Court has repeatedly struck down advertising restrictions on lawful products, even when those products are inherently unsafe or dangerous even, such as with alcohol, tobacco, or pharmaceuticals. And finally, the Supreme Court has made clear that absolute bans on advertising of lawful products are particularly problematic and unconstitutional. The Department of Justice looked at these same cases and came to the same conclusion that we did. And in that light, it approached us about resolving the case amicably. That led to a settlement agreement between Christine and the department. They called for a number of things. First, Director Kova would issue a directive instructing her staff not to enforce the ban on the advertisement of raw milk. And second, the department would call for a bill to repeal the ban. And that's all this bill would do. It would simply remove an unconstitutional provision from the Oregon revised statutes. And in that light, really, it's nothing more than a housekeeping measure. And the last thing I would like to say is just that it's important to recognize what the bill would not do. And the department has already spoken to this, I think. Number one, the bill is not an attempt to expand access to raw milk. It's not an attempt to open a policy debate about raw milk. And the bill would leave in place every other restriction that currently exists on the sale of raw milk in Oregon. That includes the limit on the number of producing cows that a farmer may have. It includes the requirement that sales only occur on the farm where the milk is produced and only directly to the consumer. Those provisions, those restrictions, would remain in place if the bill were passed. The bill would simply allow farmers who are operating within those strict parameters, farmers like Christine, to speak about the product that they are lawfully selling. And in that light, we would respectfully request the committee's support of the bill and that it voted out of committee with a do-pass recommendation. And I would be happy to take any questions if the members of the committee might have them. Thank you. And again, I apologize for being a little short of breath. I was running to find a quiet place when I got the call.
Great. Thank you, Michael. We'll take Christine's testimony and then open it up to the two of you for questions.
Okay, Chair Edwards and members of the committee, thank you for your time. I am the much talked about Christine Anderson of Cast Iron Farm. I am a raw milk producer, and I operate under the raw milk exemption that allows me to produce and sell raw milk on our premises, given that it is sold to consumers on the property and that we have two or few producing cows. And until recently, we were banned from advertising milk. In July of 2012, I was visited by an employee of the Oregon Department of Ag who said that they were investigating an anonymous complaint that I was advertising raw milk for sale. There was a price listed of our milk on the website, and there was also some information about our cows and the milking of the cows. At that point in time, we did remove any reference to that.
And then in November of 2013, we brought this suit against ODA to change this constitutionally problematic law. So whatever your knee-jerk reaction may be to the subject of raw milk itself, I just want to remind you that the Supreme Court has upheld the right for people to advertise products such as tobacco and alcohol. And that's merely what we're asking, is that you rectify this constitutionally problematic clause that's in this bill that does ban me outright from talking about this product that is legally, that I'm legally able to produce according to the state of Oregon. If I were to go home today and remove all of the information about our milking and from our website, it would also include what our safety information is. It would also include our voluntary testing that talks about our milk quality, and those tests are available publicly for our consumers or anybody to see. I would appreciate your help and support in changing this very small matter. Again, we're not trying to milk more cows. We're not trying to deliver milk. We're not trying to debate whether raw milk is good or bad. We're just merely asking for the opportunity to continue operating as a business in Oregon, selling our legal product. And again, I would take any questions you have.
Thank you, Christine. Senator Przanski.
Yeah, I have no question with this. I mean, it just sounds like it is a housekeeping that just needs to be taken care of. I guess the one thing is I vaguely remember, but I was wondering if you can give us a little bit more information as to why you would be prohibited from going to a farmer's market if you were the seller of the milk at a farmer's market as compared to at your actual farm.
My understanding is, as this was put in, this particular ban on advertising was put into legislation somewhere in or before the 50s. It's unknown to me. Perhaps that's something Lisa could ask, but it's just, that's what the law says, that you're not allowed to do that.
And
would you like to hear from the department?
I'd love to.
Okay. Any other questions for either Christine or Mr. Bendis on the phone? Okay. Michael, why don't you, if you can, sit tight until we close the hearing, at least on this, in case anything else comes up.
Do my stay.
I will. Thank you, Senator Edwards.
Sure.
And members of the committee.
Sure. Lisa.
Again, for the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski. The law specifically states that it has to be sold from the premises. Why or how that was put into the law. The law's been around since the 50s. I actually went back and looked today just to see how old it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very specific in this very narrow exemption.
I understand that's what the law says, and it's now 60-something years old. Do you know, Lisa, if the department would have any opposition if it did provide for the farmer to actually be able to sell directly to individuals at a farmer's market? If that, what the position of the agency would be,
but in a different bill, because this is relating to the advertising of raw milk.
Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, you may or may not be aware that the consumption of raw milk is very controversial. It's a very emotional issue for many people, and it depends on which view you have of it for how you feel about it. From a food safety perspective, I know that Oregon Health Authority has significant concerns about raw milk sales and consumption from a health perspective because of the pathogens it potentially carries. Our food safety staff have significant concerns because of the pathogens it potentially carries as well. And so we have adhered very closely to this part of the law. I believe if you brought forward another bill, the dynamics and the support around it, it would fill up a room in terms of the testimony. I mean, that's what we have seen previously.
Okay, just curious, knowing that we have farmers markets, it seems to be getting food and product directly to individuals in urban areas where they do not have to, let's say, have a carbon impact of going out to the farm to do it.
All right. Any other thoughts, questions for panelists? Okay. Well, we're going to thank you both for being here. Thank you, Michael, for being with us on the phone. I think this one's ready to go unless anybody wants any more time. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2446, and we're going to open up a work session. I should have customarily, I ask if there's anybody else sitting in the room that wants to testify on it that hadn't signed up. I forgot to do that. So if there's anybody with concerns, please, although we're not in a public hearing, wave your hand. Okay.
Move forward.
So we're going to. I'm not going to contribute to.
Sorry, so, Mr. Chair, just had to.
No. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2446.
Chair Edwards, I move House Bill 2446 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson has moved House Bill 2446 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the motion carries. And as Senator Olson, do you want to?
Go ahead.
Senator Brzozowski?
I was going to say it would be my utter delight to carry the bill.
It's yours.
He's got it.
It's yours. Unless you can top that one.
No.
Okay. We're going to close the public. We're going to close the work session. Senator Brzozowski will carry the bill. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2446. And we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2534. And Representative Witt, if you could kick us off here, and Beth, tell us a little bit about what the bill does.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2534A has a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact issued. The measure would direct the Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt rules prohibiting the use of drones for hunting, angling, harassing, and trafficking wildlife and interfering with a lawful angling or hunting.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt, Oregon's House District 31. Appearing before you this afternoon in support of House Bill 2534. This is a bill that operates on the premise that drones or unmanned aerial vehicles are antithetical to the notion of a fair chase. As a result, it asks that the Fish and Wildlife Commission develop rules that would ban the use of drones while angling, hunting, trapping, harassing, tracking, locating, or scouting wildlife. And it would also do the same for the interference of any of these otherwise legal activities. Were Oregon to adopt this, we would become one of nine states that are either in the process of banning drones or have already banned drones in the pursuit of various forms of wildlife. I strongly urge your support for this bill. There simply is no room for this level of technology in hunting and fishing. Thank you very much, and be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Senator Olson, and then I have a question as well. A
couple notes for you, Representative Witt. Thank you for bringing this bill. What about if someone uses it for recreational to take pictures of wildlife and photography and stuff like that? Would that be exempt, or would that be because you'd be tracking then?
Yes, that would be, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, that would be an allowable activity as long as it was not harassing the wildlife in the process of taking those photos. So much like my ability to drive out into my field at night in one of my vehicles is a lawful activity unless I'm shining those lights on the elk that are out there and harassing them in the process. So.
Okay.
Would so we just passed a bill out of this committee last week that was relating to fireworks for use for animal control, and I think one of the underlying premises of that was that there are certain instances in which there are certain birds that can be, you know, quite harmful. This would preclude that, and I don't know if it's ever done or not. It didn't even occur to me that this bill would preclude the use of a drone to harass birds that were causing damage, perhaps to crops, or, and I don't know if you guys considered that or not. Had these bills not even been right next to each other on back-to-back days, I might not have even thought of that. I don't know. But did you guys talk about that at all? Or
Mr. Chairman, we not only talked about it, the bill provides an exemption for ODFW, its agents, its contractors, to be able to use drones that would otherwise be considered harassing in order to be able to manage wildlife. So it does provide that exemption.
Okay. Yes, Senator Olson.
Another exemption would be harassing geese around airports. Would that be in there? Would that be included? Or
if, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, it would need the endorsement of ODFW to presumably be able to carry that out. So
okay, but there would be a room for it.
There'd be room for that if it was considered wildlife management.
Okay. Thank
you. Just following up on that, but you know, we did also hear that golf courses and refuse stations also would like the ability to do the fireworks, which could be harassing. And you know, clearly the intent of this bill is not that. The intent of this bill is to not, you know, harass in any case, but you know, track, locate, or scout for the purpose of hunting, right? And so you believe that implicit in that would allow photography or these other purposes that are not related to hunting. I'm just wondering if down the road it might be useful to make this more explicit.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Denbrough, I believe it is explicit, but you know, I'm certainly not opposed to any kind of amendment that would make it even more explicit. So,
yeah, I think this is a great idea, frankly.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think that's all the questions we have. Yeah. Okay, next we have Al Elkins. Joe? Yeah.
I'm on your left, Al. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I represent the McKenzie River Guides Association, which is a group of fishing guides that have been in existence for 80 years, the ALSI Sportsmen's Association, and Seafood Oregon, which is the four commodity commissions that work on the ocean. So basically, I represent a very varied group of people. We support this bill. From a guide or a sportsman standpoint, being interfered with or outcompeted by somebody with a drone just seems very unsportsmanlike to us. This is an emerging technology, and on the commercial side, we see some possibilities to use this technology to do things like scout for crab pots that have gotten into the surf zone and other things like that. And so we would like to have the commercial fishing exempted for now, but I'm sure we'll come back and ask for some narrowing of the allowed uses. We just haven't developed our technology yet. But it's pretty clear from the sports side that the use of drones in hunting, trapping, or angling is unethical. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We drafted a bill in relation to drones and use, prohibiting them in the use of hunting, but that did not include angling. So we worked with Representative Witt on this bill. We support this bill. We want to preserve the sporting ethic of fair chase, and we think this bill helps do that. Right now, this is emerging technology, and no one's really got a handle on all the uses for it, but I think this helps us stop what could be an ugly mark on fair chase in our sports. So we thank the committee for hearing the bill today and hope that you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions for the panelists? Okay. Thank you both. Brett Brownscombe.
Thank you, Chair Edwards, and members of the committee. Brett Brownscombe, Acting Interim Deputy Director with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I just wanted to briefly state for the record that while this is not the department's bill, we have worked closely with the sponsor, with other proponents and stakeholders of the agency to whom this is very important, and it fits very well within the agency's mission. It started out as and remains a bill focused on fair chase and the pursuits of hunting, angling, and trapping. And we worked along with proponents at the on the House side to develop language through amendments that are now incorporated into the A and Gross version of the bill that address the desire to make sure that the use of drone or unmanned aerial system technology in hunting, angling, trapping related pursuits is prohibited while not reaching over into potential unintended consequence areas that would get at things like Senator Olson, you had suggested, and others around. Potentially, there's a use for this technology to reduce costs, including risks to lives in managing wildlife in the future. There's also, we heard testimony, Senator Denbro noted, on protection of property, including golf courses from geese. So the amendment language was fairly carefully crafted to try to be sure we are not casting too broad a net, but still achieving the purposes of the bill without precluding things in the future that may be relevant and important. And so I just wanted to comment for the record that there has been a lot of work on the language, and from the agency's end, we're happy to continue working on this bill in any way possible, but believe a lot of work has gone into it to date and appreciate those who have worked on it. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Are there any penalties for violation of this law?
The Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I believe violation of this law would trigger the I don't think there are specific penalties tied General. To the use of drones, but hunting outside of lawfully permitted purposes under the license issuance of the state, those penalties would be triggered.
Okay. Follow up? Yeah. There was one thing that just struck me when I was reading this, water-based vehicles. I know along McLaughlin Boulevard, there's some ponds out there, and kids take their little boats out there, and they run around. They chase the ducks and stuff. Would they wouldn't be covered under this bill for harassing the ducks, would they?
Senator Evers and Senator Olson, I believe not, because okay. The purposes are, the bill is really triggered, or the prohibitions are triggered by if the intent of somebody going out there is to hunt, angle, trap, or pursue an animal for those purposes, that's where you run into the prohibitions. But if your intent is to be out there taking photographs or doing something else, unless it's to intentionally harass wildlife, I don't think this bill would be triggered.
Want to make sure.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Brett? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, folks, are we comfortable? Senators?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You okay?
Yeah, I would just, be
yeah. Vote. Okay. Yeah. I think that this one's ready to go. So yeah. We're going to close the public. Before we do that, is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill that did not sign up? Okay, seeing none. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2534. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2534.
Chair Edwards, I move House Bill 2534A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson has moved House Bill 2534A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on this?
Just, yeah. You know, for that time in the future when somebody's trying to extend the scope of this, you know, to limit other activities, you know, just we want to be really clear for the record that we're talking about hunting and angling here. We're not talking about photography and, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think with that clear understanding, this is a great bill.
Mm-hmm. Other comments, questions? All right. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay. Senator Olson, you want to carry it? Okay. Senator Olson will carry the bill, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2534.
Representative Witt gets in all his notes.
We will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2453. If the Department of Forestry could come forth while Beth tells us a little bit about what the bill is related to.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2453A has a minimal revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the bill. The measure itself would make conducting large commercial events on state forests subject to review for potential impacts and permit requirements to address any potential concerns. And there are two amendments that are on the list. I think that agency will speak to them.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Liz Dent, and I'm the division chief for state forests. Sitting with me this afternoon is Justin Buttress, and he's our policy analyst. So this bill is intended to address large, unpermitted commercial social events, such as overnight rave parties. These typically draw or can draw hundreds of people and vehicles, and they raise serious public safety, law enforcement, fire danger, and resource damage concerns in state forests, particularly in the Clatsop and Tillamook forests. This bill would make conducting these large commercial events on state forests a Class A misdemeanor if the person that's convening these events does not obtain a proper permit. While most of these rave parties are single-night events, some are marketed as two- or three-day musical events. It's not unusual for these events to draw 300 to 800 people and several hundred vehicles. Tillamook County Sheriff's Office reports responding to several such events on state forests each year, and the Clatsop County Sheriff reports an increase in these events in the past 5 years. Authorities report problems including illegal drug use, a high likelihood of sexual assault, sanitation concerns, unsafe or intoxicated driving that cause injuries, dangerous use of fire that increase fire risks, wildfire danger, extensive garbage dumping, road and resource damage, and vandalism. So the Tillamook County and Clatsop County Sheriff offices are both supportive of this bill, having experienced significant challenges associated with these activities, as well as reporting tragic vehicle accidents as participants leave these events. The promoters of these communicate about these upcoming events such as in such a manner that law enforcement is unable to monitor the events or plan accordingly. The problems are further complicated due to safety issues that these officers face when approaching such events that may have 400 to 800 participants. Therefore, these events are nearly impossible to shut down. They at times require Tillamook, Clatsop, Columbia, and Washington counties to join forces to gain control in an attempt to shut these events down. Most of these events are held outside of our current state forest permitting process that otherwise could provide a variety of requirements and safeguards. Organizers of these events can collect tens of thousands of dollars in revenue from these events. And under the current authority, the penalty for these events is considered a violation with a fee of $500 or less. So with the adoption of this bill, A permit would be required that would be issued by the Department of Forestry, and it would be targeted at events with 35 or more participants and 15 or more vehicles, and that those events would last for more than 3 hours. Under the proposed bill, these activities, that if they occur without the appropriate permit, would be considered a Class A misdemeanor. This class carries the maximum penalty of a year in prison and $6,250 fine. Alternatively, a court may require the defendant to pay an amount not exceeding double any gain that is in money or property that is that occurs through the from holding these events. So regulating these activities would allow law enforcement to make arrests and will provide a disincentive to event organizers that would essentially reduce the frequency of these events, as well as the unsafe or unsanitary conditions that are associated with the activities. Likewise, law enforcement could gain the ability to seize the audio or lighting equipment that goes along with these activities. So issuing permits for these activities would alert state and law enforcement that would create the ability to help monitor and plan accordingly to be able to make to essentially control the occurrence of these events. The introduced version of this bill was amended to address concerns that were brought to our attention in the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resource hearing. These concerns led to increasing the threshold of participants to prevent groups such as hunting camps that would be inadvertently subjected to the legislation. We also developed language that would add buffers between the permitted event and any forest practices to ensure that there's no interference with timber management, and adding a statement about the total length of the permitted event to comply with existing land use statutes. The -4 amendment to this bill is a commitment to also protect cultural resources in the case that a large commercial event is permitted on state forest lands. This amendment was developed in collaboration with both the State Historic Preservation Office and the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. So that's all I have for testimony today, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this bill, and Justin and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Questions, committee members? I guess I have a couple. Do we have campgrounds, state parks? Okay, so first of all, is this mostly happening in campgrounds or just on state forest land that's not necessarily in an organized campground?
That's right, Chair Edwards. These are not happening within organized campgrounds. They're actually happening in actually more remote areas within our state forests, making them even harder for law enforcement to contain.
Okay. And then I guess if to the extent that we have campgrounds that are located in state forests, would passage of this bill supersede state parks' ability to govern what happens in campgrounds with large group events? And I'm imagining we have some located somewhere, but perhaps we don't. I don't know.
So on Chair Edwards, so on state forest land, we do have several campgrounds, and recreators that are using those campgrounds pay a campground fee to use those campgrounds. This bill would not preclude any existing policies or practices around those campgrounds. Those are largely separate from state parks campgrounds and the management of those campgrounds.
Okay.
So state forest versus OPRD.
Okay. Questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a question. Can you say something about why there might be opposition to this? I didn't see any testimony in OLIS. But I noticed that some people voted against it on the floor, including people who had voted for it out of committee. Do you know what the concern, can you say something about what the concerns might have been?
Sure, Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro. And I'll ask Justin to fill in if I don't track all this. But I think part of the concern, the flavor of those that discussed why they were voting against the bill were around the idea that people, that the state forests are public land and that people should have access to that public land sort of in an unpermitted fashion, and that that if this bill were passed, it would somehow restrict, you know, young people was some of the testimony, from being able to go out into the forests and hold parties, and that in that way, this bill was restricting the ability of young people to do that, and furthermore, putting perhaps undue risk penalties that they would have to undergo if that were to happen. So, but clearly, we're talking, you know, very large events. So I would argue that in most cases, it wouldn't apply to that type of activity. Would you like to add anything, Justin?
Captured it well.
Senator Przonski.
I think I now have some questions. So defining large organizations or parties, do we have a number count that we're going to actually try to, I mean?
That's right. Yes, we do. Chair Edwards, Senator Przonski, the way it's defined is 35 or more participants.
Right, 35 or more. So that's probably part of the reason of the issues. I can only say rite of passage, there's a lot of people that probably have gone to keggers that were more than 35 people. I think the other issue I see is 3 hours in length or longer. Why 3 hours as compared to overnight, 6 hours, 12 hours?
Right.
Because the waves that we've heard about that's actually happened on private property outside of Cheshire have been ones that are billed to be overnight, if not the full weekend.
Right. Chair Edwards, Senator Przonski, I guess first I'd like to handle the question about the number of people. And we came up with that through collaboration with law enforcement and their discussion with us about what size of a group could they really work with in the event that these should take place, where they could approach that size of group and work with them accordingly. So that's where the number came from, and also working with other stakeholders that were concerned about being able to hold some sort of smaller gathering, such as 25 to 35 people. So that's how come we upped it to the current writing of the language, which is 35. And I'll let Justin speak to the hours.
Yeah, Chair Edwards and Senator Przonski, the answer is largely the same for the timeline as well. We chose 3 hours because most spontaneous things that might occur that you'd have 35 or more people around at a given time, probably going to be less than 3 hours in length. So we needed to have a time threshold that was short enough that police could monitor the situation and react if they needed to. Rather than having it be overnight, we'd have to prove that they were there overnight or 12 hours or something like that, which can extend past a shift of a single officer and those sorts of things. So it was designed to be short enough that an officer can respond to that event as it's happening.
Could get permits.
Right, and anything that's, you know, would otherwise be subject to this, of course, we offer permits for. That's the intention of the bill.
Follow up. So I'm looking at page 2 of the bill, and I haven't skimmed it all, but just looking at very quickly, line 38 talks about the department may not issue a permit that authorizes a large commercial event to continue more than 120 hours in a 90-day period. And I understand you don't want to have multiple parties coming in weekly or whatever it may be. And so here we're looking at, I mean, this is almost like looking at some of the mass gathering statutes, and that's always gets my antennas up when I start looking at that. So, I mean, I can understand why some people that may have supported it removed their support when you start looking at the size and the duration, and understand that this was done in concert, no pun intended, with the law enforcement as to what they can or can't handle. But it just doesn't seem, let's say, reasonable to have that type of restrictions on what I believe is the bigger problem, where you are talking about hundreds of people. That's what the testimony says, and that's what I've seen other places, and ones that are going in duration more than a few hours. So that's just comments. Thanks.
Are there standards set out in the bill? So the bill establishes that under these certain conditions, they have to get a permit.
That's right.
And does the bill enumerate under which conditions a permit would be granted or denied?
Chair Edwards, the bill would be...
Your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name for the record, Justin Buttress, Oregon Department of Forestry. The bill directs the department to do rulemaking, and under rulemaking we would establish standards under which we would permit or not. And actually we have permitted an outdoor music festival on state forests before, but we required, you know, certain safety standards be in place. They wanted to do it in July with fire, so we required that we had fire personnel on staff, for example. So we would set out those requirements in rulemaking.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about the bill and when I look at the bill, I mean, on the one hand, first of all, I support the basic premise, particularly when you're talking about, like, I mean, during the middle of fire season. I mean, you know, there's, you know, some sort of controls I think are absolutely appropriate. God knows we spend enough money in the state fighting forest fires, and, you know, large gatherings could put some of our lands at risk. However, on the other side, I'm not sure that, well, I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine that you couldn't, one of the definitions is they have an organizer. And I don't know, I mean, I could see things happening via Facebook and there is no organizer. You know, I mean, somebody's there, but nobody's identifying themselves as an organizer, and it's kind of a crowd decision that everybody's going to a certain place at a certain time, and your hands would actually be tied with that as a threshold requirement.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Chair Edwards, on that, if a group of people just decides to get together in the forest spontaneously, hundreds of people, for the purpose of, say, mountain biking, and they just, it's a user group that they all know each other on the internet, and they decide to go, that actually happens, and yeah, there is really nothing we can do about it. There is no organizer in that case. In the case of these raves, there is usually a very clear organizer. Somebody is collecting the money. They hire staff to attend, show people where to park, collect monies, and that sort of thing. So it's a big profit for them. They rent $10,000 worth of stereo equipment because they're making that much money. Yeah. So there's a money trail, and the officers are usually able to track that down, and pretty quickly when they arrive on the scene at one of these things, they can figure out who's in charge, and at that point respond appropriately. Okay. If money's not changing hands, then it's just a spontaneous group, something like that, with no organizer, then it would just be sort of existing statute and rules that would apply, and this bill would do nothing.
Okay. Senator Denver.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I understand that's the intent of the bill, and I fully support it. But, you know, when I look at the definition in the bill for large commercial event, which is what we're talking about, it, you know, really just says it's a gathering that has an organizer, is held for the purpose of a shared or common activity or experience, and then some of the limitations in the numbers and hours. But the commercial nature of it is not really defined at all. So, and yet, you know, it's implicit, certainly, in terms of, you know, the fine that could be imposed. Is it elsewhere in the bill there's a definition of commercial?
Yeah, so Chair Edwards, Senator Denbro, if you... Orient yourself to Section 7. An organizer commits a Class A misdemeanor if the organizer accepts money or other items of value in exchange under an exchange described under Section 12A of this 2015 Act prior to the issuance of a large commercial event permit. So the crime occurs if it meets those definitions, and then the organizer accepts money, which is what sort of introduces the commercial nature of the organization. If a nonprofit, a church group, a family reunion, a group like that were to assemble on the forest and otherwise meets these requirements, but there's no monies changing hands, then there wouldn't be a trigger for the actual crime of the bill, and there wouldn't be any action that could be taken by law enforcement at that point. That was the reason why we increased the threshold. Originally it said 20, and it now reads 35 in the amended version, was to address that sort of thing. Some of our stakeholders came to us and said, you know, we've got some hunting groups that might unfairly be targeted by this, and we don't think that's right, and so we changed the threshold to address that.
So Senator Olson, then Przanski.
I do have a question. You kind of sparked me a little bit when you said a church group. So a church goes out there, 300 or 400 parishioners, and they pass the hat, as they typically do, the collection plate. Would that fall under this?
It would. Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, it would. But they would be able to get a permit from us, and then they wouldn't be targeted by the of course, a church group is a civil group, and there probably would be no reason for law enforcement to really go after them anyway. But if they did, then yes, they would be targeted.
Senator Przanski?
I don't know if I agree with that last statement, because when you look at what the organizer is and what it says for what you're getting money for, it says admittance, parking, then it goes through some other stuff. And so if you had a church that was actually passing the hat as to the church, I don't know if that I would loop that into being a large commercial event. And I think it does make some difference when we start talking about it. As Senator Denborough says, when you look at the definitions that are here for large commercial event, and then you get to the organizer, which is actually in Section 1, as to what their lines 18 and forward, as to what they're doing and what they're actually gathering, I can understand where you can probably define out a lot of the stuff of concerns we wouldn't be there, because it wouldn't be for that same purpose. At the same time, there are times where some of these kegger type things where you may have people putting money in for bands, etc. And the question would be, is someone actually taking money in to do that, or is this a big pot and everyone's just throwing money into it to cover some cost? And it sounds like y'all have already made some, let's say, distinction between the size of the group, because if you were originally looking at 20, now you're at 35. I'm just wondering if that 35, if it would be more comfortable if it was a little bit higher in number than that number. But, you know, it is one of these things that you look at it. If you put it all together, I think you can pretty well define out that the differences between a large commercial event that's for profit, and you do have an organizer that's actually putting the show on and expecting to get money for these services, as compared to someone showing up with a lot of friends and doing their thing. So, but anyway, that's my comments again.
We have in front of us also dash on all us dash threes and dash fours.
Yeah, she went over those.
Are you, I guess the dash threes are not from you, the dash fours are?
That's correct.
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay. And you're wanting just the dash fours, not the dash threes. I haven't been through the amendments to find out what exactly and just so you know, folks, we don't have the paperwork on
right. The
bill or amendments, so we can't work it today.
Would the threes go with, consult with the Indian tribes, and the fours is broader in the sense of it's not limiting it to that, because it looks like cultural events. And
so Chair Edwards, Senator Przanski, there, I would characterize it as the dash four amendment is more overarching, and that the dash three amendment, it does name some of the specific tribes, but the idea there is sort of how we work with the tribes. So in the dash four amendment, we're saying that we will take steps to make sure that these cultural resources sites are buffered and protected.
Makes sense. Okay, so the dash fours would encompass everything in the dash threes, but be further.
I think the dash threes actually require the department to actually work and consult with tribal members
right.
and stuff, depending on where they're at. what they're saying is basically if we have these cultural resource areas, we're going to identify where they're at, and then we're going to set a buffer to that's keep them from being impacted.
That, Chair Edwards, Senator Brzezinski, that's correct.
Okay, that's correct. And that's the dash threes, you said.
Four.
That's the
fours. Dash four.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Other questions? Anybody? Thank you both for being here.
All right. Thank you.
We don't have anybody else signed up to testify on this bill. We're not going to work it today. But is there anybody else that's here at the public hearing that wants to weigh in on this issue? I don't see anybody. So we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2453. And that completes our business, scheduled business of the day. So we'll adjourn the committee. We'll adjourn the committee of the day. So.